It all comes down to something that you can mark up. You have to be able to buy wholesale and sell retail in some way, shape, or form. And if you can do that, then you can dramatically enhance your returns by using my strategy.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome, everyone. Glad to have you on today's Finance Friday episode. We got a good one for you. We got a guest on this show. I know most of the time these are kind of solo episodes where I dive into a personal finance topic and go over that with you. Because as we all know, it's not what you make, but what you keep. And to create a life that you want to live requires understanding stuff that we're just not taught in school when it comes to personal finance. And so today, I actually have a guest on, really cool story. His name is Tom Lonnie. He had a 30-year career in the music industry. He was a sound engineer, producer for names that you've heard, like Bruce Springsteen, Stevie Nicks, really cool. And he had an incident that forced him to leave that industry. And unlike most people who probably would have been defeated and kind of just sulked and got on with their lives, he actually created a new career that he's very successful in. And that's the topic we're going to talk about today. And that's on how to be your own bank. And yes, you can do it. He dives in how you can access your money without stunting its growth. Just think about it. If you want to access money that you've invested in, say it's in the stock market or even in real estate, you got to pull that money out. So then it's going to stop growing and that stunts the growth of your portfolio. As we know, compound interest, the sooner you start, the greater amount you're going to have in the end. But two, if you stunt it, it's also going to hurt the overall growth. So he talks about a strategy, how you can access that money, but not stop the growth. It's still going to grow while you use it. And this is, I've kind of alluded to this in previous episodes. It's a strategy where you can take out that money, it's still growing, then you can take that money and go invest it in something else. So then it grows even more. And there's a term that's thrown around the industry called infinite banking, because essentially you're making money there and here. So it's infinite. It's kind of a murky term that's thrown around, and Tom gets into why he doesn't really like that term, but it's a phenomenal strategy that I plan on deploying in the near future. And it's something that I feel everyone should deploy. So I'm not going to take up any more time in this intro. This was a great episode. You're going to get a lot of value out of it and definitely take some notes. All right, let's get into it. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to hop on and share your experience with our listeners.
Thank you so much, Sean. I'm really excited to be here. Very, very cool. I'm happy to have the opportunity.
I'm excited. I know a little bit about your story, that looked into it, heard a few podcasts, and it's very interesting. Definitely not the norm. And I'm excited to hear more about it. So if you don't mind, just kind of, everyone loves a good origin story. Kind of let us know where you came from and what you're doing now.
So I created a financial strategy called Bulletproof Wealth, and I'll go back into how in the world that happened. So I was in the music industry, Sean, for 29 years, and I just was so fortunate that I got to work at the very highest level of the music industry. I was a mix engineer and recording engineer and producer, and I got to work with acts like Bruce Springsteen and REM and the Fabulous Thunderbirds and Stevie Ray Vaughan, and just the list just goes on and on and on of really awesome artists that I got to work with. Stevie Nicks, just, I don't know, a ton of wonderful, high quality talent. And what I was doing with those people, truthfully, was helping them realize their vision of their music, like trying to say, okay, this is what I think this song should be. They just kind of have a sketch in their mind. And then I try to bring that into the fullness of reality by adding the correct players to it, adding the correct treatment, getting the sounds exactly right, and bringing out the best arrangement. So that's what I did for 29 years. And at the end of that stretch, I started to lose hearing in one ear and was no longer able to continue to do that job. But thankfully, and I mean, I'm so grateful that I had a financial advisor way early in my career, like 25 years ago, tell me about this concept called long-term disability protection, where you're protecting your ability to earn a living. And when I started losing hearing, that thing kicked in and started paying me a tax-free monthly income. And I could have just quit, not done anything else, and just let that go for the rest of my life. But I really was like, wow, if I didn't have this, I would have been in huge trouble. And so I want to learn all I can about this whole concept of protecting your wealth and what's going on. And that was the core catalyst to me developing this Bulletproof Wealth strategy, is me being protected. And it's just, Sean, I'm telling you, there's so few people that really have this type of long-term disability coverage. Most people are unaware of it. It's not that common. And so I'm kind of on a crusade to help people understand it. But that's just one element of what I do now for real estate investors.
That's amazing. That's so cool. You said Stevie Nicks, right, that you worked with?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's wild.
And that's impressive. But what's even more impressive to me is that you lost that job. That the time was your identity. That's what you did. That's who you were. I feel like most people would just feel defeated. And you were lucky enough to have that financial plan in place where it would continue to pay after that. But I feel like most people would feel defeated and just live off that and not do anything with your life. So to me, it's more impressive that you said, no, let me share this with the rest of the world. And now you've created something very cool. So let's dive into this strategy that you're the Bulletproof strategy you're talking about and what it means.
I would love to. Okay. So the very first element of it, and is the kind of the foundation, is making sure that your income is protected. And there are a lot of W-2 workers that are working for somebody else that their employer provides that for them. So that does happen, where it's provided by employers. And I'm always excited when I hear that. The second element of my Bulletproof Wealth strategy is the more complex one. And that is, where are you saving money? What I do is I help people create a line of credit inside of specially designed life insurance. And it's just, I've done all of the research on this during those 5 years that I was getting that disability check, because that's how long that I was on claim for disability. I went back to school and got 3 financial designations. So I'm a chartered financial consultant, a chartered life underwriter, and a chartered special needs consultant. And so I really learned the entire kind of broad level basis of what is out there in the financial world. And the strategy that I came up with is very, people don't know about it really. Creating a line of credit in life insurance is not something that people really have heard of much. I mean, I do run into people now where it's getting more and more popular, but that is the second leg of what I do. And what it is that everybody has to save money somewhere. Okay. You have to put money somewhere. And the typical place that people are putting money is inside of traditional banks in order to be able to use it themselves. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this at all, Sean. And I know this is something you used to do as well. But the other thing that people do is they put their money in the market and have somebody else manage it for them. And they have assets under management, and they basically caretake people's nest eggs or their resources for them. And that is not really who my client is. My client are people who want to be in control of their money. And that is how I ended up working with almost exclusively real estate investors. That's mostly who I work with. So just circle back around, you create this line of credit. It works very, very much like a home equity line of credit. In fact, that's the best way for me to explain how it works, is by comparing it to a home equity line of credit. So I'm sure all your listeners out here are familiar with the home equity line of credit, correct?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. So in a home equity line of credit, the amount that you have is fixed. In other words, you get a home equity line of credit and it's going to stay there no matter what. With a life insurance line of credit, the amount of credit that you have, the line of credit goes up each and every year. That's one of the big differences. So every year you're adding, you have the ability to add new money to it and your line of credit goes up, and eventually it goes up by way more than you put in because there's this compound growth factor. The second thing that is slightly different than a home equity line of credit is that with a home equity line of credit, the basis for the line is based on the equity in your house, and the basis for a life insurance line of credit is based on the equity in your life insurance policy. So it's both, they're both equity based, and life insurance really is a separate asset class. So it's really cool. The other thing is that when you use your home equity line of credit, if you have it, if you use a home equity line, it actually takes away from your credit score. So your debt to income ratio is affected and your credit score usually drops when you use it because it just kind of is triggered by, it's reported by the credit reporting agencies. On a life insurance line of credit, your debt to income ratio is not affected and it's sort of off the radar of the credit reporting agencies. So you can use it in and out actively for doing investing, take money out of it and put money into it, and it doesn't affect your credit score at all, which is one of the things that's kind of cool about it. So it's very similar to that, but again, it's based on equity inside of life insurance. Have you ever heard of anything like this before, Sean?
Yeah, Tom, that's powerful. I don't want to confuse it, but the kind of the buzz term or the popular term you're hearing these days is infinite banking.
And I've been an authorized infinite banking practitioner since the program started. Literally, I was in the very first class of people that went through all of the training to actually do that. Now, I have definitely understand infinite banking inside and out and have been doing it for a long time, but I've added to it to create the Bulletproof Wealth strategy, because reality is that infinite banking is very myopic and it only does this one thing, whereas my approach is more holistic and I add to it with other elements to give you a more well-rounded financial strategy.
Awesome. What are some of those other elements you'll add?
Well, for one thing, there's no disability protection in infinite banking. Okay. So obviously, if something were to happen to you and you were to get sick or hurt and you couldn't work like I did, well, your policy is going to blow up. Right. It's going, you're not going to be able to continue to put money into an infinite banking policy. So it's really important to have that leg or that protection that I had in order to do it. And that has nothing to do with infinite banking. Okay. The second thing is that when I actually structure the life insurance policy, I make sure to include some special provisions so that if you get sick or hurt and can't work, there's no required payment to the life insurance policy. That's called a disability waiver of premium. That doesn't pay you any money, but it just makes it so your policy continues on and the life insurance company makes those minimum payments for you. So that's another element. And then the third element that I bring into the picture that's not infinite banking is I capture your maximum insurable interest with a special type of term insurance called convertible term, so that you can later convert to a banking style policy if you want to, but you don't have to go back through medically to get approved for it. So there's kind of a more broad basis to my strategy than just straight up infinite banking, if that makes sense.
No, Tom, that does. And that's great. I've heard several people talk about infinite banking and no one has ever mentioned those elements. So listeners, if anyone is interested in this, I would definitely go to Tom, because I've never heard anyone else reference any of these elements. And those are super important because, yeah, what happens if something happens that's out of your control? That's great.
Yeah. The bottom line is that's how I can call it the Bulletproof Wealth strategy, because right. I'm trying to do everything possible to make you bulletproof, and something goes wrong or unexpected happens like it did to me, then you're not just sitting there with a lapsed infinite banking policy wondering what happened. I mean, that's what most people are getting when they get into traditional infinite banking, is they're just looking at this one very laser focused thing. And look, I have a much deeper financial background than most traditional investment banking people. So I look at it in a more holistic way.
That's great. So what Tom is talking about is essentially becoming your own bank. And this is the closest yes. way you can do that. And Tom, if you don't mind, can we just walk through a scenario? I know with insurance, it gets tricky because it depends on, you know, the person themselves and their medical history and health and all that. But let's say you have someone 30 years old, has $100,000 that they want to put into a policy. Kind of what would that look like? And then what's kind of the benefits they could take maybe to say, go invest in real estate? What would that kind of look like just to get give the listener kind of a high level overview of what this actually is?
Sure. So basically, I have multiple ways that I design policies for people, and it depends on their initial, how much money they want to put into it initially. So if you had $100,000 saved up and you wanted to start it, most of the way that I would do it, most of the times would be where it's $100,000 that drops in the first year, but then you can't put in $100,000 every year. That's going to create a really huge policy. So I have a special design that I do called a hybrid design where it allows more money to go in the first year and then less every year after that. So it might be like 100 going in the first year and then a maximum of 50,000 going in year two. And then in order to keep the policy going, you need to put in a minimum of, let's just say, 25. So you might be able to put in 100 the first year, a maximum of 50 the next year, and then a minimum of 25. So you have this wide range of money that you can contribute. If things are going well, you put in the maximum. If things are not going as good that year, then you put in the minimum. And the great thing is there's a catch-up provision. So if you don't fully fund year two, then you can make it up in year three. So that would mean that if you put in the minimum of 25 in year two, you could put in 75 in year three. You could put in the 50 plus the catching up of the prior year's 25. So if somebody put in $100,000, because you're buying an asset of life insurance, let's just say that they're able to create a line of credit of somewhere around 75. I'm just making that up. It depends on your health and a lot of other variables. But let's just say you had a $75,000 line of credit. What that means is that you have an initial drop in liquidity of 25 grand. You're not going to be able to access that the first year because let's face it, the only financial vehicle that exists that you can put 100,000 in and pull 100,000 out the next day is a bank account. There's nothing else. I don't care if you buy mutual funds or what you do with it, buy a house, nothing. You can't put 100 grand in and pull 100 grand out a day later without some sort of consequence to it. And because you're purchasing life insurance, you're actually buying that asset. So you have initially a drop in liquidity on how much you can pull out. Now, that being said, by year eight or so, all of the money you ever put into this policy is available to borrow against, at least by around year eight. And by year four, on a cash on cash basis, the amount of money you put in is usually equal to or greater. You can pull that money, that same amount out. So let's just say for example, 50,000 goes in year four, you might be able to pull out 54,000 as a loan. So you can pull out more money that year than you put in. And what you are doing essentially is you would never do this if you don't understand how banks make money. So what I like to do to help people really get this concept in a simple way is I like to explain how banks make money. And then what I'm doing is putting you guys in the position of a bank to make money like they do. So let's say, for example, you put $100,000 into a bank. How much is the bank going to pay you? Give me a guess, Sean, of what a traditional bank would pay you on a $100,000 deposit.
Well, it depends. If it's in a checking, you're getting zero. In savings, you're getting like an eighth of a point or less. So
let's call it an eighth of a point, right? Well, I tell you what, just to make the numbers really easy, let's say quarter of a point. Okay. So a quarter of a point on $100,000 would be the bank would give you a whopping $250. All right. After 1 year, they would give you $250. That's one quarter of 1 point on $100,000. Now, what does the bank do with your $100,000? They take that money and they lend it out. Okay. They lend your $100,000 out. And let's just say for round numbers that they lent it out to somebody for 5.25%. All right. So that means that the bank is making $5,250. Now, this is the thing that really blows people's minds is that the bank did not use their own personal $100,000 to loan out. They used that depositor's $100,000, which means that the cost of capital for the bank is $250 and they're making $5,250. Now, believe it or not, that is not a 5% rate of return. A lot of people say, well, if they're spending 0.25% and making 5.25%, that means they're netting 5%. But in truth, when you look at it on a dollar's perspective, that's a 2,000% rate of return. They're making 20x their capital back by giving money out, by taking money in and paying a tiny amount for it and then making a larger return. It's exactly what I'm teaching everybody to do. And you can do it through multifamily investing. Because let me ask you this, Sean, take people's money in, for example, what is the average return that they're getting back on one of your syndications?
It depends, but anywhere from 12 to 18% average annual return.
Okay, 12 to 18% is amazing. So if you were, I want to keep the number simple and let's just call it 10%. Is that okay? Yeah. Just to make it simple. Yeah. So if you were to give somebody 10% return and they were to use borrowed funds or increase their leverage and give that you money from borrowing against their life insurance policy. And let's just say they borrowed against their life insurance policy at 5% and they were to make 10% through investing in a multifamily syndication, they're not making 5%, okay? They're now making money like a bank does. And the actual rate of return that they're making is 100% because they would essentially, to give you $100,000, they would only have to be paying the $5,000 in interest to the life insurance company. And then if you're returning them 10%, you're returning $10,000 to them. So they're spending five to make 10, and that is a 100% rate of return. Once that light bulb goes off in people's minds, then they try to figure out, now, wait a minute, how much money can I put into something like this?
Right.
Because I want to figure out how to increase my returns as well. That's what I do, is I help people show them what they can do, what they're capable of. And it's really a fun process. I absolutely love it.
That's great. That's really powerful. And listeners, you can see how that can exponentially grow your wealth because you're putting your money to work instead of letting the bank do that and make money off of you. So,
totally.
Tom, I know it depends on the type of policy you're using. I believe you're using whole life. Is that correct?
I specifically only use whole life personally, and that's what I have on myself. I do this, obviously, I do this myself, so I eat my own cooking. Yeah. And I would never use any other type of policy. And the reason is because what you're doing with me is not an investment, okay? There's no way that I'm giving you investment-like returns because you're not taking investment-like risk. This is a very similar in risk profile to putting money into a bank account. So I'm getting you an average of, let's just say, 3 to 4% IRR on the money that you put in with me over time. But it is like, so it's a bond-like return without even the risk of bonds, really. It's the most stable place you can put money that exists. And the reason I don't use any other type of insurance other than whole life is because the collateralization opportunities in whole life are the highest because banks perceive them as the lowest risk. And so once you get a cash value above $100,000, then kind of the world opens up for you and you can get a lot more opportunities to maximize your terms on being able to borrow against your policy. So I can get lower interest rates and all these other cool things when your cash value gets above 100,000. Before 100,000, it's around 5% loan rate. After 100,000, it's around 3.25% right now. So you get a better terms as you move forward with these designs. Does that make sense? I know I said a lot.
No, it does. And even though you're getting 3 to 4% IRR, you're still keeping up with inflation, which is the most important thing. And on top of it, if you're taking a loan out to invest in something like real estate, then you're making even more. And then once you get up over 100,000, the rate goes down and your spread is increasing even more.
Exactly. And there's very few people who understand spreads and arbitrage and all that. And so what I try to do is bring it down to very simple language to help the average real estate investor be able to get these concepts, and I help them figure out how to implement it. And I show them, this is what I do. I mean, I do private lending. I'm involved in self-storage investing. And I like to help people understand how they can increase their returns. It all comes down to something that you can mark up. You have to be able to buy wholesale and sell retail in some way, shape, or form. And if you can do that, then you can dramatically enhance your returns by using my strategy. As long as you realize that going out and buying a car, for example, retail with this strategy, it really doesn't work. That is not anything that I recommend, even though some traditional infinite bankers seem to be hung up on buying groceries and cars with it. I think that that's ridiculous because you're not buying wholesale and selling retail, but if you're buying a retail car, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Right. I had this conversation yesterday with a gentleman and he was like, well, I want to use my infinite banking policy to go buy my car with. And I said, well, he already had purchased the car. And I said, what was the rate of interest that you're paying on your car loan? He's like 2%. And I'm like, okay, what is the collateral that you use to purchase that car at 2%? Well, after a lot of dialogue, he finally came up with the right answer that it was the car itself.
Yep.
The car itself is collateralizing the car, which is great because you want to use self-collateralized things as much as you can, right? So you taking a loan from your policy at 5% to pay off a 2% rate on a self-collateralized product doesn't make financial sense.
You're spending more.
Right?
And
no, you're just spending more and you're giving up the collateral capacity of your life insurance to be able to go and use it where there's nothing else that can collateralize it. For example, down payments on things. I mean, if you're able to use 75% LTV on a buy and hold property, you can use this for your 25% down payment. And it just adds to your leverage in a safe way and therefore enhances your rate of return dramatically.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. Take the money out of the policy to go buy real estate, which produces income, and then use that income to pay for the car. That's
totally. Sean, that's the magic formula right there, man. You nailed it. It's very, though, amazing how much confusion there is, which is one of the reasons I don't love the term infinite banking, because there's so many people out there that are saying nonsense as it relates to it, because they really truly don't understand it themselves. It just kind of is a little bit of a mind blower. But if you really get down to the brass tacks, that is a reason, the only reason, but one of the reasons why I just call it Bulletproof Wealth, and I've added to it and enhanced it so that it can be my own thing and I cannot say a bunch of things that don't make sense related to it. That way people don't have preconceived notions that are wrong.
Right. That's so true. I'm glad you brought that up because technically you can use the money to do that, but that defeats the whole purpose of setting this up.
Totally. Technically, you could use the money to go on a trip to Hawaii. At the end of the trip, though, you're going to have no money and you're still going to owe back the insurance company the interest and they're going to have to repay the loan. So the whole concept is you have to be making more money with the investment than you owe back, and then you're multiplying your rate of return dramatically. I just was at a conference 2 weeks ago in Florida in front of 700 real estate investors where I went through a very specific example of how I increased my rate of return by 13.3x by utilizing my own strategy. 13.3 times more rate of return just by doing what I teach people. And I went through the numbers and how it all works. And it was really, really cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. If you want to be a bank, you got to think like a bank, and a bank is not thinking, let's take money and go buy some material stuff. No, let's go take the money and make more money off the money.
That's exactly right. You got to think like a bank. And by the way, this is no secret. You can Google it. Banks have this thing called BOLI, which is bank-owned life insurance. They literally are putting multiple billions and billions of dollars of the number one consumer of this type of insurance is banks. They put it on all their key employees and they fund it to the maximum amount they can. And they know how this strategy works and they're employing it themselves.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's a good piece of information. So this 13x return, is it a long story or could you get into it? Because that's
I can get into it. No, I would love to. So if you guys ever heard of, or Sean, I'm sure you have heard of mezzanine debt or second lien position. So
but you might want to explain it to the listener though, but yeah.
Absolutely. So basically when you do private lending, you can either be in first position or second position. That means that if there's a default, the first position lender gets paid off first. So that's lower risk. Okay. And when you're in second lien position, it's a little bit higher risk because the first lien has to get paid off. So you can demand a higher return on this type of debt. So a borrower came to me and said, hey, I have this need for some second lien position money, but the first lien position was teeny tiny. It was only $100,000 of first lien position money on a home valued at like, I don't know, I think it was 1.1 million. So it was almost no first lien position debt. And it was local, so I knew the neighborhood. And the after repair value was so high on this house that he was buying to fix and flip that I was like, yeah, I can give you money, no problem. Second lien, because the first lien was only 100,000. So it's just a lot of meat on the bone. And I lent him 125,000. And the terms were 3% at closing was the kind of the startup getting the thing going. That was the loan origination fee that I charged, which means 3% on 125,000 was like $6,750, I think is what that was. No, I'm sorry, $3,750 was 3% closing. So he paid me that and then 1% per month. And they were planning on holding it for 12 months to do this project. So that was $1,250 a month, right? So if you do the math on all of that equals $18,750 in interest that I got paid for a $125,000 loan in second lien position, right? So the checks were $3,750 to close, $1,250 a month, $18,750. I would have made a 15% rate of return had I used my own money. So giving somebody 125 grand, they pay me back 125 plus 18,750. That's a 15% rate of return. Now, because I did not do that, I just used the insurance company's money. All I had to do was pay the interest and I was arbitraging the difference. So I was just paying the interest on that $125,000. And instead of 15%, I ended up with a 200% rate of return because my cost of capital was super low, right? And so if you take 15 and divide it by 200 or 200 divided by 15, that's a 13.3x increase in the rate of return that I got by lending this guy other people's money rather than using my own capital to do the deal. Now, here's the thing that is kind of cool too, Sean, is that I don't even discuss this as part of the equation, but I also got a dividend from the insurance company for my $125,000 that was still at the insurance company. So you get a dividend as a kicker, which obviously increases your overall rate of return. But I just look at that as a bonus.
Yeah, so you're getting it on the full amount, even though you loaned it out. So
yes,
that's what's powerful about it. Even though it's technically not in there, but it is because it's a loan. You're still getting paid the full amount and that.
So what that means is that if you had $1 million, for example, in there and you lend out 100,000, you don't get a dividend based on 900,000. Mm-hmm. You get a dividend based on your whole million because you're collateralizing against that cash value. You're not taking it from the cash value. Much the same way as a home equity line of credit works, you're not chopping a room off of your house physically. You're just collateralizing the equity, and they're saying, okay, you have this much equity, we'll give you a loan against that equity. That is why I compare it to a home equity line of credit, because people understand how that works and it all kind of makes sense and it feels a little bit less mysterious when I compare it to that.
Right. That's another reason why it's so much better than the home equity line of credit, on top of the fact that it doesn't go against your, you know, debt to income ratio, because we all know as real estate investors, that's one thing they look at when they're lending money. So that could ding you. So that's another powerful thing.
Super powerful.
Is there a limit on how much you can put into a policy like this? Is it based off
income? Yes. So look, Sean, that is an awesome question. I'm so glad you brought that up. The way that I explain this to people, if we have a few more minutes, is that insurance is the same across the board. So let's just talk for 1 minute about auto insurance. Let's just say that you're driving like a, let's just call it a Chevy pickup truck. You cannot go to State Farm and tell your auto insurance company that you would like to insure your Chevy pickup truck for $1 million because in case you run it into a tree, you want to get that latest Lamborghini in all carbon fiber, right? They're not going to go for it. It doesn't matter if you have the money to pay the premiums. They cannot legally put more insurance on your Chevy pickup truck than is allowed by the company for replacement value. They call that indemnification. So they're replacing the loss of that pickup truck. Well, life insurance works the same way, in that you cannot go and say, hey, I make $25,000 a year. Could I have a $20 million life insurance policy? Nope, it ain't going to work. What they use is a 4% income replacement ratio. And here's how the math works. If you got, let's just say something happened to you and your spouse got $1 million, they're assuming that she could invest that money conservatively at a 4% return rate, and that would replace your income. So $1 million replaces $40,000 of income. Just to make the math simple, 2 million replaces 80,000, 3 million replaces 120. So that is how they determine how much life insurance you can get. Now, to add further complication to it, the older you get, the less income they allow you to replace. So you can replace exactly your income when you're 41 to 50, like I think 41 to 50, and below age 40 and below, you can replace a little bit more than you make. It's because they're assuming you're going to make more money in the future if you're younger than 40 years old. So the first thing I do is I help people understand how much they can qualify for. And let's just say you're a 30-year-old making $100,000, you'd be at a 30x multiple or $3 million. So that means that you could replace $120,000 or 20% more than you're earning. Okay. So it really makes sense why they allow you to buy it. It's for replacing your income if something happens to you. It makes sense why they allow you to replace a little bit more income than you make at a younger age, because they're assuming you're not going to want to go back and buy life insurance every couple of years, right? So the first thing I do is figure out that max amount that you qualify for. Then we have something to work with. Then I try to put in the most money possible, or I show people what the most money possible they can put in for the least amount of life insurance. So in contrast, convertible term insurance works just the opposite. You're putting in the least amount of money for the most amount of life insurance in convertible term insurance, which is great for somebody who's just getting started and wants to lock their health in. But back to the whole life, you're putting in the most amount possible. So you might be able to put in 100 grand, let's say, for a $3 million life insurance policy at age 33 or 30, something like that. But that, you cannot buy one more penny of life insurance if you have that 30x multiple captured. I know that was a lot, but did that make sense to you, Sean? Did you follow me all that way?
No, it does. And thank you for that. I don't think anyone ever explained it to me that well before. I appreciate that personally. And I'm sure the listeners do too.
No problem.
So we're at the time of the show where I ask a final question. And Tom, this show, is about growing wealth and creating passive income so you can then create the type of life you want through real estate. But at the end of the day, it's not what you make, but what you keep. So with that said, we bring in a personal finance aspect to this. So, if you could go back in time and tell your younger self one piece of financial advice, what would that be?
Well, let me just tell you, I was very, very thankful that my younger self had this disability policy. But if my younger self have ever heard of my strategy, which he hadn't, right, I would tell him, get started on doing this as soon as possible, because I just wish that I knew what I know now. I wish I would have known it 20 years ago, because believe me, I would have been throwing as much money as possible over the years into this type of a plan, so that now I would have even a larger amount of money to borrow against and create for passive income. So honestly, I wish my younger self knew what I know today. And I would say, just get started and do something. And here's one huge mistake I see people making, Sean, is that they are slightly overweight or have some little health thing now, and they think mistakenly that they're going to get healthier as time moves on. They're like, oh, I'm going to just delay this another year because I need to lose 10 pounds. I've heard that so many times that it's like, ay, ay, ay. Guys, if you need to lose 10 pounds, just start. And then later, once you're healthier and this future you is healthier, we can go back and get a rate class improvement. So all I can tell you is, don't hesitate to get started. And that's what I wish I would have done earlier than I ended up doing it.
That's great, Tom. Thanks. And yeah, the power of compound interest is only more powerful the sooner you start. And so don't wait. Like Tom said, if this is something you're interested in, which you should be, start now. And so with that said, Tom, how can listeners find you if they want to dive into this a little more?
So my website is bulletproofwealth.info, and it has a place where you can sign up to get access to really extensive training course, and I don't charge anything for it. A lot of my contemporaries are charging for the training on how this works, but I give it away free because I really want people to know, even if you end up not working with me, I at least want you to know how all of this works. So just go to bulletproofwealth.info, put your name and email in there, get my free video education. I'll explain that whole 11 or 13.3x return thing in detail. I'll explain how this works for children's policies, how to maximize the use of it, how I do all the different policy designs. And that is the best way to learn.
That's awesome. Well, I know I'm going to check it out. And I think all listeners should too, because it's a lot of great value that we're going to get for free. And this is something that will set your financial trajectory in the right direction and set it apart from where everyone else is at. So I highly recommend it. Tom, thank you for your time. This was very invaluable. It was incredible. So thank you. And
you're welcome.
As we all know, your life can be what you want it to be, but it starts taking action and creating the type of life you want to live. So not only can you take care of your family and yourself, but you can take care of other things that are important to you and take care of the world and make it a better place. So it starts with you, taking action. And I highly recommend taking action on Tom's material. So thank you for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's a little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.